Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
With me, Giles Brown. Joining me live in the studio, Campbell Ferguson and Alex Radford. Always lively here on Viewpoint. And down the line in Miami, Nathan Thomas, former ABC correspondent, of course. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. Studio at tre.radio or studio at talkradio.com is the email. The Facebook page, if you wish to leave a comment, is Talk Radio Europe Official. And we talk about several things on this show. We've just obviously dealt with the issue of charity and Oxfam and the developments coming out of there. We will be looking at the other news making the headlines, especially the latest talks on Brexit. But now we're going to go on to a subject which I didn't actually think when I took over this show a couple of years back we'd ever really actually touch on. But we're going to be touching on the Winter Olympics. This is perhaps the most significant and most political Winter Olympics for a very long time. Nathan, the whole issue of the careers and where the US, Mike Pence was over there as well, and he studiously ignored the North Korean delegation who was sitting beside him. And they also came in, the American team came in to Gangnam Style, apparently, which was a big hit in the South Korean pop charts a couple of years ago. But this year's Winter Olympics takes on a specific political hue, you'd argue.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about that. The fact that it is in Korea, and problems with North Korea have taken a lot of international focus for the past year or so, building up possible conflicts to who knows what level. And then the breakthrough that many people are calling it, where Kim Jong-un actually sent a delegation and actually a 500-person delegation, I think, which about 20 people are actually athletes. But, I mean, this kind of contact between North and South Korea is something we have not seen for decades now. I mean, it's been tried before, and it seems to have failed. The one interesting thing about this is there's a lot of talk about, oh, well, the Koreans are getting together and doing this outside of the United States, and the United States is being taken out of the equation. But what people don't realize is that for decades, the problem was just the other situation. North Korea, going back to Kim Jong-un's grandfather and father, did not want to deal with South Korea. They wanted to deal only with the United States, which the U.S. and South Korea agreed that this was not the way this could be handled, that this was a civil war and it was a situation between the Koreans. The U.S. would do what they thought was helpful to South Korea, but they were not going to be the intermediary where you know, North Korea could negotiate just with the U.S. It was a U.N. settlement, the talks in Panmunjom and so on. But what's happened now, and people are criticizing it, oh, the Koreans are talking and cutting the U.S. out. Well, this has been the goal for a long, long time. Not that the U.S. is cut out. I mean, they certainly are dealing with the North Koreans, with the South Koreans, and I don't think there's any problem with that relationship at all. It's a very strong relationship, which I've seen you know, ever since I was in Korea in the military at one point, and as a journalist, I was in Korea an awful lot over the years. So, I mean, I don't think that relationship is going to be hurt. But people are saying, oh, Donald Trump has been so extreme in his exchanges with Kim Jong-un that they are being cut out. But this is exactly, and I'm not saying this is a Trump plan, I'm just saying this is what's happened, is that the two Koreas are now dealing with each other, which has been the goal for decades.
Indeed. Any thoughts on that from the panel, what's happening with the Koreas? Alex?
Well, first of all, I think I agree with Nathan. I think it's a great opportunity for the Koreans to start to open talks, because as we saw before the Berlin Wall came down, unless you bring down those walls, communication's not going to open. So I think the fact that a North Korean delegation with President Kim Jong-un's sister included is attending the Olympics and attended the open ceremony, I think it's fantastic news. I think it's a start, and hopefully, you know, there'll be some thawing of the ice. As far as the sports on the field are concerned, Campbell's going to talk about the curling as a good old Scot, but our kind of main gold medal hope is a lady called Lizzie Yarnold, who won a medal in Sochi at the last Winter Olympics. And do you know what skeleton is, Giles?
Is it sort of like bobsleigh the other way around? Is it a very the sort of thing I used to go on when I was a small child?
Yeah. So when you were younger, when it snowed,
yes.
Did you got a sleigh out and you went and played in the snow?
Absolutely.
Right. But did you ever get a tea tray out and go down?
Yes.
You know, barrel down on a roller coaster ride, averaging about 120 kilometres an hour with just a helmet to protect you.
We did have, between the upper field and the lower field at my school, there was a sort of like Cresta Run that was built by, I think, the fourth years. Yeah, so that probably, yes.
Well, this is what skeleton is. It's basically people getting on what can literally be described as a tea tray and going head first down a slope at average rides of 120 kilometres an hour. So let's hope Lizzie brings back gold. Well done to the States, Nathan, in that Red Gerrard. He's not a Liverpool player, but he's a 17-year-old, and he won the first gold for USA in the slope style, and that is basically snowboarding.
Right.
So he got a gold medal for snowboarding.
There's lots of sports coming in that I've actually never sort of really heard of. People were saying there was the cross ski and the, I mean, I used to think it was the one, the Nordic skiing, when they used to sort of go for about 3 or 4 hours, you know, yomping through the snow and then shooting. But yes, Nathan, please forgive me for a minute while I indulge with the curling aficionado here that is Campbell.
The curling hasn't really started yet for Team GB. For some reason, they didn't have a... male-female team.
Yes, mixed curling.
Mixed, that's the word. They didn't have that team. But they do have, of course, men's teams and ladies' teams. And there was comment made of this Russian curler, who is apparently a star and whatever, and it was described on the Mail as she has a look that would melt the ice.
Not a lot of good on a curling rink if she's got a look that it would melt the ice.
Sometimes you want the ice to be slightly melted. That's what the sweeping is about. That's what the brushing's about. It's to help things move along.
You want a Russian with a brushing, basically.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Giles. That's excellent, I said, yeah. But we have that, and she's been made a sort of a star because of her looks on the Daily Mail. And then looking through, thinking, well, there's Eve Muirhead, who is the skip, the leader of the British ladies team. And sure enough, on the Mail once again, she has been shown as somebody spectacular. And it's not, they're not going on the sports. I think you said earlier in a sort of brief on this today that are the Olympics really coming to their... are people really watching the Olympics? Are they? Do they have any priority in people with people at the moment? And it's one of the problems when driving here, listening to the Sky News, what the only thing they said about the Olympics was that somebody had been caught for drugs. Yes. There was nothing about results, nothing about Team GB, nothing like that. It was Sky News. The last item was, oh, yes, and somebody's been caught for drugs on the Olympics. And that was that.
I mean, the Winter Olympics used to mean sort of only a couple of things like the downhill, and then there was always, and Nathan, you will remember this very well, because there was always the former Soviet Union ice hockey team taking on the, either, you know, they would normally trample over the Swedes at some point, and then they would face the US, and that was the big clash of the superpowers, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, and I mean, again, that goes back to the politics of the whole thing, but we are still fairly early into it. Here in the US, I'm surprised the interest is there much more than I had expected just from the run-up where when I was in Spain. I mean, you didn't seem to hear much about preparations or anything else. But now that it's started, I think people are paying more attention. Of course, one of the big problems is when you have the Winter Olympics in Asia, as they are this time, you're dealing with the East Coast of the United States, a 13-hour or 14-hour time difference. So if you really are interested, you can know the results long before you'll ever see it on television. So there is, I think, less television coverage certainly here in the U.S. than there would be if things were actually happening in a time zone that was close to when the audience was going to be watching television.
And the other thing is the fact that, we remarked on this briefly last time, but the fact is that the perhaps in the Summer Olympics, which are obviously the more glamorous of the Olympics, but with the Winter Olympics, the Asian nations have been pumping money into this, and someone like Sochi, which was had massive government money pumped into it, the Russian government, it really just goes give those Asian nations a chance, as we're seeing with South Korea and the United Korean the teams that are appearing, a chance to take to the world stage, and sport is forever being used nowadays hand in hand as a political event, Nathan.
Oh, definitely it is. And I mean, this is why, you know, countries very often try to get the Olympics into their country. I mean, the first world countries not so much, but as you know, for a country like Korea, it is a fabulous PR opportunity, assuming everything goes well. And this is going probably better than they could have even hoped, because there was a lot of concern several weeks ago before this coming together of the North and South that Kim Jong-un may be antagonistic to the whole thing and, you know, not necessarily cause physical problems, I mean, terrorism or anything like that, but just that it would be a complication. And actually, you know, it has switched around to where that is, you know, really the big story of this Olympics.
Rich has come in on the Talk Radio Europe Facebook's site and said, is spending over £25 million, this is obviously Team GB, in the hope of getting five medals, value for money? I think not. Campbell, your thoughts? You know, if we came back with a curling gold, would you think that that's worth £28 million being spent?
Undoubtedly, yes. The 25 million is being spent, but that's to get people off the sofas and out doing these sports themselves, and to encourage all the people doing the sports. Yes, there's the few that are actually out doing at the Olympics there, but they become the leaders of all of those that are following on behind them, the young who are have the ambition to be the same as them, and for others who are enjoying their sport and get some glory from the sport, just like I have got the glory of talking with you about curling, because Team GB curlers are there. But it is something that the 25 million is nothing when if you separate that all out to all the people who do skiing, who enjoy skiing, competitive skiing, snowboarding, going down in tea trays down slopes, and curling and so on. It's a very small amount per person throughout the GB, Great Britain. So I think it's well worth it.
Alex?
Giles, I think, yeah, I mean, it sounds quite a lot of money, and we haven't even won any medals yet, but I do agree with this canny Scot sat next to me, you know, and if he's advocating spending money on sports, it must be a good thing. Well, you know, a Scot advocating spending money is very good to hear in the studio. But
well, let's be as well. So yeah. Let's not be.
But let's just cast our mind back to London Olympics 2012. How much money was spent there, and how many medals did we win? And this is not something that Team GB has been preparing for in the last 18 months. This is taking years and years of preparation. And what we've seen slowly from the 92 Olympics that were held in Spain, you know, I was here in Spain then when that flame was lit up, and I had the pleasure of going back to the stadium in the summer last year to now. Team GB has improved their standing in sports and their performance greatly. And that's encouraged young people to get off the sofa, to get involved in sports, to become active. And I think that's only a very positive thing for everyone. So we saw in the last Olympics in Rio how well Team GB did. I think we finished as the top, finished in the top three. Was it second or third we finished with on the medal table, which is a fantastic result for a country of our size with only 65 million compared to some of the lots of the other countries. So I think, yeah, money well spent. Let's get behind these guys and girls in Korea. And let's see some more medals in and see if we can pip in just behind the Americans this time again.
And you would think actually 28 million, I mean, I know it's different sports, but that wouldn't even buy you, you know, half of decent footballers' left kneecap, would it? Let's be honest with you. That's what's it wages. 952-784-4000 is the phone number. Studio@talkradioeurope.com or studio@tre.radio is the email, the Facebook page, Talk Radio Europe Official. Nathan, any final thoughts? Oh, we have a caller on the line, if you'll just excuse me. Excuse me one second, Nathan. I was going to come live to you, but we go live to the lines again. 952-784-4000. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please? Hello, caller. You're live on TRE. Hello, caller. You're live on TRE. I can see you're there. Please talk to me. And as the Welsh grandmother used to say, and there she was gone. Nathan, any final thoughts then before we move on from the Winter Olympics?
Well, I think in many cases it is money well spent. Again, a government spending money on an Olympic team and all of that has benefits beyond the medals. But I think for national pride and all of that, and again, to get people to participate in sports, which is, I think everyone agrees, is a healthy thing to do at whatever level you're doing it at, is generally money well spent. I mean, for some countries, it's an important advertising thing, as I say. And politically, it has become an important part of international politics. It will be fascinating to see with the start that we've got and the invitation to the South Korean president to go to North Korea for a visit, which I can't remember. I don't know whether that's ever happened since the Korean War. So, I mean, it looks like things are happening because of this major sporting event. So I think generally it's all pretty good.
Well, we'll look forward to that. We'll look forward, hopefully, by this time next week, Campbell will be out celebrating a curling gold for Team GB.
Just to add to the thing, as Nathan said, it helps the spirits of the country. And certainly, I'm quite sure that most of Scotland was lifted at the weekend with them beating France at rugby. I know it certainly put a spring in my step for a short while.
We'll be back with more springs in a step after this.
This is TRE.
TRE.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Listen to me, Giles Brown on Viewpoint Talk Radio Europe's current affairs show. It's live, it's lively as always here on TRE Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain. 952-784-4000, the phone number, studio@talkradioeurope.com, the email and the Facebook page, Talk Radio Europe Official. We've also got studio@tre.radio as well. I'm joined live in the studio by Alex Radford and Campbell Ferguson, and on the line from Miami by Nathan Thomas. It's to Alex we go next because we're going to speak about a topic that we have spoken to on Viewpoint over the past couple of years. It's a story that doesn't go away. It is, of course, the latest developments, the latest news in Britain's negotiations about the Brexit. The clock is ticking, Alex. It's a busy week in Brexit. Give us a quick rundown of what we can look forward to this week.
Yeah, you're right, Charles. This is quite a busy week for the British Cabinet of Ministers. You've got Boris Johnson giving us a key speech tomorrow. It will be a don't worry speech, is what we're being told. David Davis is going to be talking about business. David Lidington, the Deputy Prime Minister, will be talking about how Brexit will affect Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. And Liam Fox will be talking about the trade deals. We've got Theresa May is in Germany and in Munich on Saturday. And there's going to be another big speech there. Some of the kind of key issues that are coming up at the moment, Giles. Europe are kind of keen for the UK to remain part of Europol, which is the law enforcement agency to keep the security links between the UK and the EU. Part of the success of that programme has been the international arrest warrant. In 2017 and 2016, 196 Brits were extradited back to the UK to undergo to receive their British justice, so to speak. Mm-hmm. That's going to be one of the key themes, and I think Theresa May is going to give us the good news that the UK will continue to be part of Europol, but that does come with its difficulties, because the European, that means that we could also be subject to the jurisdiction of the European Court of Justice. Now, some people have got mixed views about this, but this is a pretty good court, full of very able lawyers and judges. And something that maybe you were aware of, Charles, but in 2014, here in Spain was treating foreigners and Spanish residents differently when it came to inheritance tax and capital gains tax. So, for example, if you were a Spanish resident and you inherited property, you might not have paid any inheritance tax. Whereas if you were a UK national inheriting, or you only had an allowance of, say, €16,000, whereas a Spaniard might have had an allowance of €175,000. The ECJ put a stop to that. So they basically said that Spain could not treat non-residents differently to residents. And now we've got a level playing field when it comes to inheritance tax, for example, in Spain. That may change after Brexit. I suspect we'll lose the allowance. We had a new allowance introduced in January of €1 million. So spouses and children can inherit €1 million worth of assets, so long as they haven't got pre-existing assets of 400,000. But the ECJ then, the UK leaving the ECJ is quite controversial, because we, as Brits, wouldn't be protected by some of those decisions. What could the British government have done to help us Brits in Spain with our inheritance tax or our capital gains tax? They did nothing. But the ECJ did step in and helped protect those Brits. And it's been it was a massive decision. So that's a big point of contention coming up. Lots of Brexiteers want the UK to leave the European Court of Justice, and others don't. And then you've got the single union and the customs unions. You've got a former business minister called Anna Soubry, who's been coming quite vocal here, and she's teamed up with some of her colleagues on the other side of the benches, Chuka Umma, and they're in favour of maintaining the UK in the single union, and the customs union. So that basically goods will be able to move freely after the key date of next year. And that's a massive point. We voted, the UK voted to leave the EU, but did it vote to leave the customs union? Did it vote to leave the single market?
Isn't this the dreaded cherry picking then? That we haven't been told from Brussels, Campbell, that we can't just pick and choose the bits that we want.
Yeah. No, it's right. And if, when you look at it overall, there are many more cherries in the cake, and you're much better to just stay with the thing rather than leave it and try and take these cherries with you, which, of course, is not going to be permitted. So that it just once again, to me, it makes no sense, the thing as a whole. The more you go into it, the more fudging and everything that's going on. And once again, the one they're not going to be able to get over, they're not going to be able to fudge, is going to be the Northern Ireland border. That's the big one that's going to cause all the problems, because there is no easy way out of that.
Well, Theresa May is meeting, isn't she, today, I think, in the next couple of days, with the Isaac Tezak to see what they can do. Taoiseach, thank you very much. To see, I had to have the teeth put back in, Campbell. to see what can be done with that. Nathan, what's your take on where we are so far?
Well, it's this idea that the clock is still ticking, and the UK doesn't seem to be a whole lot closer to at least making public what it is they really want. As Alex was just talking about the whole idea with the European courts. Yes, there are good things about it. There are bad things about it. But somebody has got to decide it is worth staying in that or it is not. The same with the customs union and the free trade area. It's either you're in or you're out. And if you are in, there are some baggage that comes along with that, some freedoms that you will have to give up in order to get those. And to me, looking at it from the outside, is kind of the UK doesn't seem to be able to decide, or hasn't yet, what it really wants. Is it important enough to be independent that we don't want, that we'll give up the free trade, because if you get the free trade, then you have freedom of movement and you don't want that. Those are all just really simple decisions, except everybody has a different opinion. And even within the UK government, there is no unified idea of what is this best deal for Britain that everybody talks about, but no one can define.
And we've got callers on the line, 952-78-4000. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning. It's Robert.
Good morning, Robert.
I'm calling from Meath. Hello. What have we got here?
Maybe you should turn your radio down if you're close to it.
I will turn it down without a problem. Just a matter of walking a few metres. Oh, yes, I can hear it.
And so can most of Europe at the moment there, Robert. Thank you very much for that.
That's it, I've done that now. Where were we? We were talking about Brexit. And there was an interesting podcast on this morning about what was happening. And the result of that podcast, even the podcasters didn't know what was happening. And like most of us down here, especially me and others like me, who are retired pensioners who came down here and bought property with the intent of staying here for the rest of our lives and not really returning to Britain. We are left in a case of limbo. We've had lots of words, lots of people saying this and lots of people saying that, but nobody has come up with an answer. You've got Gibraltar mumbling away on the background there, and also, of course, the big question, Northern Ireland. And that will not be resolved unless, in my view, I hate to say it, that Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland become Ireland. That's the only way I can see it being resolved. But that's my view.
And that is what we call the show Viewpoint, Robert, indeed. But I like the description of Gibraltar mumbling away in the background there. 952-78-4000. Campbell, you were shaking your head there at one point.
Yeah, well, I think Gibraltar's keeping its profile relatively low because it knows that whatever is sorted out for Northern Ireland has got to be sorted out for itself. And that is the further stumbling block, because Spain says it has a vote, or it does have the vote, and is able to stop anything specifically to do with Gibraltar. And as everybody has said, that it's not part of the package that will be agreed. It's got to be the whole package that's agreed. Even if they organise something for Gibraltar, Spain may not agree. I mean, sorry, with Northern Ireland, if they organise something there, and they're never going to. Northern Ireland is not going to go into Ireland as a whole. Otherwise, you're going to have the IRA problems just turned the other way around, and you have the UVF or whatever they're called. And that will just carry on. It is a problem that it's not going to go away. It's going to be a hard border is the only way I can see that it can be done.
Got a caller on the line, 952. Thank you for holding. Oh, sorry, caller on the line, 952-78-4000. Thank you for holding, caller. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, this is Steve from Calderbeck.
Good morning, Steve.
I've been waiting for today because it's probably part of my vengeance call. I think the most important thing that hasn't been discussed at the moment is the meeting on Thursday with the ambassador of Japan, with Koji Tsuruoka.
Okay.
We've seen living standards falling in the UK, pounds falling. You're not sure if you're going to be able to get people picking flowers or fruit. We've now seen the European Banking Authority disappearing to Frankfurt and the European Medicine Agency disappearing to Amsterdam. But now the ambassador has come along with Honda and Nissan and Toyota, and I've been listening to Money John, who has, I will say, rode back a little bit on his philosophies of everything's going to be okay, now say, finally, that if Brexit doesn't work out, they're pulling out. Now, it was okay before when the philosophy was is that all of these car manufacturers were supposed to be going to be doing their own deals, and they're now weighing in and saying that they're not happy with the way that the negotiation's going. The thing is that many people, I would guess, thought that the government had some sort of cunning Baldrick-style plan to rescue everything at the last minute. And at the moment, the hole that they're in, the sand is now falling on top of them because they can't get out of the problem with what's going on in Ireland. And at the moment, it seems like they don't even have a plan to move forward, let alone even go sideways. There was a suspicion on Sunday that there may possibly be another referendum. I'm not saying that there will be, but something's going to have to happen, because if the Japanese, who invest a lot of money into the UK, are now saying, what are you doing? Questions now have to be asked about what's going on with just over a year to go. I'll be waiting for Mandy John to answer, and I'd just like to hear some of the comments from the panelists.
Thanks for the call in there, Steve. A cunning Baldrick-style plan was the comment. I'll let Alex go on this first of all. Alex, your thoughts on a plan so cunning?
I agree with the caller's views in that, yes, the issue of Japanese companies creating employment in the UK is at risk. The Japanese companies employ more than 140,000 people in the UK. Many of those involved in the car industry. I used to live in Wiltshire, not far from Swindon, where there was a big Honda plant. I had friends who worked there, and they are concerned about their jobs. I just had a conversation at the weekend with someone there. They're saying they are very concerned about what's happening, and it just goes down to. I kind of feel quite sad that this decision was made in the UK and that Brexit is going ahead. I don't think at the moment we should have another referendum. I think we've all got to get on with Brexit, and we've got to do I haven't become a Brexiteer overnight. I did vote to remain, and I do strongly believe that remain would have caused less economic damage to the UK. Even with a soft Brexit, they're talking that GDP will come down by 2-3% a year, which is, and they're talking that could cause a million jobs to be, a million people to become unemployed. So the risks of Brexit remain. They're not new. And I just think some of these people and the politicians who think that they can make the best out of Brexit are living in a very blinkered world.
And we're going to go live to the lines again. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Steve's dreams come true.
Good morning, Joe.
Morning, hi. Just to have a comment on what your last speaker has said. I still remain, I couldn't care less, but to actually anybody to listen to what the Treasury said last week and what's just been slightly repeated, it's absolute nonsense. I mean, I've been in the city 50 years. The last 10, 15 years, nobody in the city has taken too much notice of predictions for a year, 2 years ahead, let alone 15 years. And for what they bought after the Brexit, the nonsense that came after the Brexit, this has proved to be totally useless. What they come out with now just basically proves that the Treasury should get rid of 75% of their economists they have, because they're totally useless. up with a 15-year prediction is absolute nonsense that anybody with any intelligence would bring it out in the first place, because most of the major agencies have been discredited over the last 15 years. As I say, whether the whether it be the IMF or basically the rating agencies, nobody takes any notice of it. That's just one thing. As regarding, we now haven't seen a situation where it's coming to a head now. And I think things I've been saying to you about Barnier being peripheral, I think he is peripheral almost, and his last comments have made him peripheral, because there's many, many governments are more concerned about what's going to happen to the people that are employed by them. And to me, it's always going to be government to government eventually. And effectively, when it becomes government to government, it means corporation, industries, and producers putting pressure on the governments. And most European governments aren't exactly very stable at the moment. And once the corporations and the people who it's going to affect, because you've got to remember, we buy 360 billion of goods from Europe, and we have almost 100 billion trade deficit. The motor industry, just to say about the Japanese industry, of course they're going to take a stand in some respects. But you've also had Toyota increasing there, and Toyota also saying they're going to, instead of having 40% of their components, they're going to go up to 80% of their components made in the UK. As regarding the banking, there's been a wholesale change there. It's not tens of thousands. It's come down to hundreds. And there's a realization, which is from the Bundesbank. Effectively, the Bundesbank guys have said, which everybody knows in the finance world, there's absolutely no chance of the trillions that is produced in London being replicated in a short period of time, whether it be Paris, Frankfurt, whatever. Everybody realizes that, but we're told all this nonsense, and most of it is total tosh. And we come back to the situation also where 85% of the world doesn't trade, doesn't have a free trade agreement. And there's also this crap about having your cake and eat it. The people who want their cake and eat it is Europe, because we are their biggest export customer. It is absolute nonsense. I think reality will drive away the stupidity of the Soubris, or the sour face, as I call her. But effectively, it is going to make a major change, and we'll see what's going to happen the next week before you can start discussing it, really.
Thank you for your call.
I'll stay online if anyone wants to query of any particular guy.
Oh, look out. We've got people waving across the studio at you there, John. Alex wants to get in there first.
John, thanks for your comments, and no doubts from which way you voted last year. But just a question. Do you think that Brexit, the UK leaving the EU, will cause any sort of financial damage to the UK?
It'll be a little bit, but we're not talking about a five-year project. We're talking about and by the way, I didn't vote at all because I couldn't care less. But I'm just seeing, and you know, I've said it to you guys before, it's almost like the UK. It's like a 40-year-old man who's been living with his mum and is too terrified to leave. And the people are going to be terrified is going to be Europe. And I'm quite convinced of that, because the UK is one of their main customers. They'll lose the finance. And to come on and say the banking industry, I know the banking industry well, is absolute tosh.
Thank you. Thank you for the Cameron. Just a quick word, Cameron, please.
Okay. Steve was saying that over the next year, it's over the next 3 months, because the problem we have is that decisions are being made by businesses now, and that's how it goes. With regard to the 15-year projections, yes, nobody can project anything for over 15 years because things happen, it's foolish to do so. We have a lot of there's also been a lot of publicity about the regional the effects on the various regions within the UK on this, how they will be affected over the next short period, and it seems to be they're all going to be affected by it, so that it's going to reduce them all. And then the last thing, just there is so much talk of, well, Britain is the biggest expire, etc., etc., Britain is going to be poorer and will therefore not be able to buy so much. The pound will be weaker and therefore will not be able to buy so much. So Britain will lose much of its significance within Europe as a buyer. So therefore, Europe will be looking elsewhere. Yes, Europe's going to be detrimentally affected, but Britain is going to be detrimentally affected much more.
And we're going quickly to the lines as well. 952-78-4000. Good morning, caller. Thank you for holding for so long. What's your name? Where you're calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Is that me again, Dan?
It is indeed.
As far as Brexit, it's like I used to be decisive, but I'm not sure anymore. But, you know, oh, crikey. Look, a referendum happened. Sorry to the Remainers, but you lost. Just get on with it. Accept it. The indecision and things being talked down and scaremongering talked up, there's nothing to help the situation. So for God's sake, just get on with the thing. You know, what's the worst that can happen? I mean, procrastinating and not making decisions at all, that does more damage than maybe making what people perceive as the wrong one. So my thing is, just get on with the damn thing, get out of the damn thing, and start to rebuild from there and get past this this moment of inertia, this absolute sort of stalemate where everybody's buffeting for position and not really getting anywhere. You know, be a man about it, get on with it, and deal with the problem and stop skirting around it.
Man up and get on with it. Thanks for the call in. Just one quick call as well. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Thank you for holding. Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hi, it's Bertha here.
Good morning.
Good morning. I want to thank John for his insight. I'm personally 100% behind everything he's said this morning. I'm absolutely, utterly sick of this scaremongering that's going on. And I really do think that we should have people in the financial sector giving opinions and not politicians. Politicians are not financiers. It's abundantly clear that they're pretty bloody hopeless at it. And I lived in Spain before Europe was even on the horizon. I lived in Spain where if the local captain of the Guardia took a dislike to you, he could march you to the border and send you home. I lived in Spain without all the EU rules and regulations. There was never any threat to me whatsoever. My children went straight into the local school. We were welcomed, and I believe that even when we are finally out of the EU, that attitude will remain the same. And just thank you, John. Thank you for the insight. We need more men like you.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Listen to me, Giles Brown on Viewpoint Talk Radio Europe's current affairs show. It's live. It's lively as always here on TRE Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain. 952-78-4000, the phone number. Studio at talkradioeurope.com, the email and the Facebook page, Talk Radio Europe Official. We've also got studio at TRE.radio as well. I'm joined live in the studio by Alex Radford and Campbell Ferguson, and on the line from Miami by Nathan Thomas. It's to Alex we go next because we're going to speak about a topic that we have spoken to on Viewpoint over the past couple of years. It's a story that doesn't go away. It is, of course, the latest developments, the latest news in Britain's negotiations about the Brexit. The clock is ticking, Alex. It's a busy week in Brexit. Give us a quick rundown of what we can look forward to this week.
Yeah, you're right, Charles. This is quite a busy week for the British Cabinet of Ministers. You've got Boris Johnson giving us a key speech tomorrow. It will be a don't worry speech, is what we're being told. David Davis is going to be talking about business. David Lidington, the Deputy Prime Minister, will be talking about how Brexit will affect Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. And Liam Fox will be talking about the trade deals. And we've got Theresa May is in Germany and in Munich on Saturday. And there's going to be another big speech there. Some of the kind of key issues that are coming up at the moment, Giles. Europe are kind of keen for the UK to remain part of Europol, which is the law enforcement agency to keep the security links between the UK and the EU. Part of the success of that programme has been the international arrest warrant in 2000. 2017 and 2016, 196 Brits were extradited back to the UK to undergo, to receive their British justice, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's going to be one of the key themes, and I think Theresa May is going to, you know, give us the good news that the UK will continue to be part of Europol, but that does come with its difficulties, because the European, that means that we could also be subject to the jurisdiction of the European Court of Justice. Now, some people have got mixed views about this, but this is a pretty good court. Full of very able lawyers and judges. And, something that maybe you weren't aware of, Charles, but in 2014, here in Spain, Spain was treating foreigners and Spanish residents differently when it came to inheritance tax and capital gains tax. So, for example, if you were a Spanish resident then and you inherited property, you might not have paid any inheritance tax, whereas if you were a UK national inheriting, or you only had an allowance of, say, €16,000, whereas a Spaniard might have had an allowance of €175,000. The ECJ put a stop to that. So they basically said that Spain could not treat non-residents differently to residents. And now we've got a level playing field when it comes to inheritance tax, for example, in Spain. That may change after Brexit. I suspect we'll lose the allowance. We had a new allowance introduced in January of €1 million. So spouses and children can inherit €1 million worth of assets, so long as they haven't got pre-existing assets of 400,000. But the ECJ then, the UK leaving the ECJ is quite controversial, because we, as Brits, wouldn't be protected by some of those decisions. What could the British government have done to help us Brits in Spain with our inheritance tax or our capital gains tax? They did nothing. But the ECJ did step in and helped protect those Brits. And it's been it was a massive decision. So that's a big point of contention coming up. Lots of Brexiteers want the UK to leave the European Court of Justice, and others don't. And then you've got the single union and the customs unions. You've got a former business minister called Anna Soubry, who's becoming quite vocal here, and she's teamed up with some of her colleagues on the other side of the benches, Chuka Umma, and they're in favour of maintaining the UK in the single union and the customs union, so that basically goods will be able to move freely after the key date of next year. And that's a massive point. We voted, the UK voted to leave the EU, but did it vote to leave the customs union? Did it vote to leave the single market?
Isn't this the dreaded cherry picking, then? That we haven't been told from Brussels, Campbell, that we can't just pick and choose the bits that we want.
Yeah, no, it's right. And if, when you look at it overall, there are many more cherries in the cake, and you're much better to just stay with the thing rather than leave it and try and take these cherries with you, which, of course, is not going to be permitted. So that it just, once again, to me, it makes no sense, the thing as a whole. The more you go into it, the more fudging and everything that's going on. And once again, the one they're not going to be able to get over, they're not going to be able to fudge, is going to be the Northern Ireland border. That's the big one that's going to cause all the problems, because there is no easy way out of that.
Well, Theresa May is meeting, isn't she, today, I think, in the next couple of days, with the Isaac Tezak to see what they can do. Taoiseach, thank you very much. To see, I had to have the teeth put back in, Campbell, next week, to see what can be done with that. Nathan, what's your take on where we are so far?
Well, it's this idea that the clock is still ticking and the UK doesn't seem to be a whole lot closer to at least making public what it is they really want. As Alex was just talking about the whole idea with the European courts, yes, there are good things about it. There are bad things about it, but somebody has got to decide it is worth staying in that or it is not. The same with the customs union and the free trade area. It's either you're in or you're out, and if you are in, there are some baggage that comes along with that, some freedoms that you will have to give up in order to get those. And to me, looking at it from the outside, is kind of the UK doesn't seem to be able to decide, or hasn't yet, what it really wants. Is it important enough to be independent that we don't want, you know, that we'll give up the free trade, because if you get the free trade, then you have freedom of movement and you don't want that? Those are all just really simple decisions, except everybody has a different opinion, and even within the UK government, there is no unified idea of what is this best deal for Britain that everybody talks about, but no one can define.
And we've got callers on the line. 952-78-4000. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning. It's Robert.
Good morning, Robert.
I'm calling from Meeness. Hello. What have we got here?
Maybe you should turn your radio down if you're close to it.
I will turn it down without a problem. Just a matter of walking a few meters. Oh, yes, I can hear it.
And so can most of the Europe at the moment there, Robert. Thank you very much for that.
That's it. I've done that now. Where were we? We were talking about Brexit. And there was an interesting podcast on this morning about what was happening. And the result of that podcast, even the podcasters didn't know what was happening. And like most of us down here, especially me, and others like me, who are retired pensioners who came down here and bought property with the intent of staying here for the rest of our lives and not returning to Britain. We are left in a case of limbo. We've had lots of words, lots of people saying this and lots of people saying that, but nobody has come up with an answer. You've got Gibraltar mumbling away on the background there, and also, of course, the big question, Northern Ireland. And that will not be resolved unless, in my view, and I hate to say it, that Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland become Ireland. That is the only way I can see it being resolved. But that's my view.
And that is what we call the show Viewpoint, Robert, indeed. But I like the description of Gibraltar mumbling away in the background there. 952-78-4000. Campbell, you were shaking your head there at one point.
Yeah, well, I think Gibraltar's keeping its profile relatively low because it knows that whatever's sorted out for Northern Ireland has got to be sorted out for itself. And that is the further stumbling block, because Spain says it has a vote, or it does have the vote, and is able to stop anything specifically to do with Gibraltar. And as everybody has said, that it's not part of the package that will be agreed. It's got to be the whole package that's agreed. Even if they organise something for Gibraltar, Spain may not agree. I mean, sorry, with Northern Ireland, if they organise something there, and they're never going to... Northern Ireland is not going to go into Ireland as a whole. Otherwise, you're going to have the IRA problems just turned the other way around, and you have the UVF or whatever they're called. And that will just carry on. It is a problem that it's not going to go away. It's going to be a hard border is the only way I can see that that it can be done.
Got a caller on the line, 952. Thank you for holding. Oh, sorry, caller on the line, 952-78-4000. Thank you for holding, caller. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, this is Steve from Calderbeck.
Good morning, Steve.
I've been waiting for today because it's probably part of my vengeance call. I think the most important thing that hasn't been discussed at the moment is the meeting on Thursday with the ambassador of Japan, with Koji Tsuruoka.
Okay.
We've seen living standards falling in the UK, pounds falling. You're not sure if you're going to be able to get people picking flowers or fruit. We've now seen the European Banking Authority disappearing to Frankfurt and the European Medicine Agency disappearing to Amsterdam. But now the ambassador has come along with Honda and Nissan and Toyota, and I've been listening to Money John, who has, I will say, rowed back a little bit on his philosophies of everything's going to be okay, now say, finally, that if Brexit doesn't work out, they're pulling out. Now, it was okay before when the philosophy was is that all of these car manufacturers were supposed to be going to be doing their own deals, and they're now weighing in and saying that they're not happy with the way that the negotiation's going. The thing is that many people, I would guess, thought that the government had some sort of cunning Baldrick-style plan to to rescue everything at the last minute. And at the moment, the hole that they're in, the sand is now falling on top of them because they can't get out of the problem of what's going on in Ireland. And at the moment, it seems like they don't even have a plan to move forward, let alone even go sideways. There was a suspicion on Sunday that there may possibly be another referendum. I'm not saying that there will be, but something's going to have to happen, because if the Japanese, who invest a lot of money into the UK, are now saying, what are you doing? Questions now have to be asked about what's going on with just over a year to go. I'll be waiting for Mandy John to answer, and I'd just like to hear some of the comments from the panellists.
Thank you for the call in there, Steve. A cunning Baldrick-style plan was the comment. I'll let Alex go on this first of all. Alex, your thoughts on a plan so cunning?
I agree. I agree with the caller's views in that, yes, the issue of Japanese companies creating employment in the UK is at risk. The Japanese companies employ more than 140,000 people in the UK, many of those involved in the car industry. I used to live in Wiltshire, not far from Swindon, where there was a big Honda plant. I had friends who worked there, and they are concerned about their jobs. I just had a conversation at the weekend with someone there. They're saying they are very concerned about what's happening. And it just goes down to I kind of feel quite sad that this decision was made in the UK and that Brexit is going ahead. I don't think at the moment we should have another referendum. I think we've all got to get on with Brexit, and we've got to do I haven't become a Brexiteer overnight. I did vote to remain, and I do strongly believe that remain would have caused less economic damage to the UK. Even with a soft Brexit, they're talking that GDP will come down by 2-3% a year, and they're talking that could cause a million jobs to be a million people to become unemployed. So the risks of Brexit remain. They're not new, and I just think some of these people and the politicians who think that they can make the best out of Brexit are living in a very blinkered world.
And we're going to go live to the lines again. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Steve's dreams come true.
Good morning, Joe.
Morning, hi. Just to have a comment on what your last speaker has said. I still remain a couldn't care lesser, but to actually anybody to listen to what the Treasury said last week and what's just been slightly repeated is absolute nonsense. I mean, I've been in the city 50 years. The last 10, 15 years, nobody in the city has taken too much notice of predictions for a year, 2 years ahead, let alone 15 years. And for what they bought after the Brexit, the nonsense that came after the Brexit, has proved to be totally useless. What they come out with now just basically proves that the Treasury should get rid of 75% of their economists they have, because they're totally useless. With a 15-year prediction, it's absolute nonsense that anybody with any intelligence would bring it out in the first place, because most of the major agencies have been discredited over the last 15 years. As I say, whether the whether it be the IMF or basically the rating agencies, nobody takes any notice of it. That's just one thing. As regarding, we're now having seen a situation where it's coming to a head now. And I think things I've been saying to you about Barnier being peripheral, I think he is peripheral almost, and his last comments have made him peripheral, because there's many, many governments are more concerned about what's going to happen to the people that are employed by them. And to me, it's always going to be government to government eventually. And effectively, when it becomes government to government, it means corporation, industries, and producers putting pressure on the governments. And most European governments aren't exactly very stable at the moment. And once the corporations and the people who it's going to affect, because you've got to remember, we buy 360 billion of goods from Europe, and we have almost 100 billion trade deficit. The motor industry, just to say about the Japanese industry, of course they're going to take a stand in some respects. But you've also had Toyota increasing there, and Toyota also saying they're going to, instead of having 40% of their components, they're going to go up to 80% of their components made in the UK. As regarding the banking, there's been a wholesale change there. It's not tens of thousands. It's come down to hundreds. And there's a realization, which is from the Bundesbank, effectively the Bundesbank guys have said, which everybody knows in the finance world, there's absolutely no chance of the trillions that is produced in London being replicated in a short period of time, whether it be Paris, Frankfurt, whatever. Everybody realizes that, but we're told all this nonsense, and most of it is total tosh. And we come back to a situation also where 85% of the world doesn't trade, doesn't have a free trade agreement. And it's also this crap about having your cake and eat it. The people who want their cake and eat it is Europe, because we are their biggest export customer. It is absolute nonsense. I think reality will drive away the stupidity of the Soubrys, or the sour face, as I call her. But effectively, it is going to make a major change, and we'll see what's going to happen the next week before you can start discussing it, really.
Thank you for your call.
I'll stay online if anyone wants to query of any particular guy.
Oh, look out, we've got people waving across the studio at you there, John. Alex wants to get in there first.
John, thanks for your comments, and no doubts on which way you voted last year. But just a question. Do you think that Brexit, the UK leaving the EU, will cause any sort of financial damage to the UK?
It'll be a little bit, but we're not talking about a five-year project. We're talking about and by the way, I didn't vote at all because I couldn't care less. But I'm just and you know, I've said it to you guys before. It's almost like the UK. It's like a 40-year-old man who's been living with his mum and is too terrified. And is too terrified to leave. And the people are going to be terrified. It's going to be Europe. And I'm quite convinced of that, because the UK is one of their main customers. They'll lose the finance. And to come on and say the banking industry, I know the banking industry well, is absolute tosh.
Thank you. Thank you for the call. Cameron, just a quick word, Cameron, please.
Okay. Steve was saying that over the next year, it's over the next 3 months, because the problem we have is that decisions are being made by businesses now, and that's how it goes. With regard to the 15-year projections, yes, nobody can project anything for over 15 years because things happen, it's foolish to do so. We have a lot of there's also been a lot of publicity about the regional the effects on the various regions within the UK on this, how they will be affected over the next short period, and it seems to be they're all going to be affected by it, so that it's going to reduce them all. And then the last thing, just there is so much talk of, well, Britain is the biggest buyer, etc., etc. Britain is going to be poorer and will therefore not be able to buy so much. The pound will be weaker and therefore will not be able to buy so much. So Britain will lose much of its significance within Europe as a buyer. So therefore, Europe will be looking elsewhere. Yes, Europe's going to be detrimentally affected, but Britain is going to be detrimentally affected much more.
And we're going quickly to the lines as well, 952-78-4000. Good morning, caller. Thank you for holding for so long. What's your name, where you're calling from, what's your viewpoint, please?
Is that me again,
Charles? It is indeed.
As far as Brexit, it's like, I used to be decisive, but I'm not sure anymore. But, you know, crikey, look, a referendum happened. Sorry to the Ramoners, but you lost. Just get on with it. Accept it. The indecision and things being talked down and scaremongering talked up, there's nothing to help the situation. So for God's sake, just get on with the thing. You know, what's the worst that can happen? I mean, procrastinating and not making decisions at all, that does more damage than maybe making what people perceive as the wrong one. So my thing is, just get on with the damn thing, get out of the damn thing, and start to rebuild from there and get past this moment of inertia, this absolute sort of stalemate where everybody's buffeting for position and not really getting anywhere. You know, be a man about it, get on with it, and deal with the problem and stop skirting around it.
Man up and get on with it. Thanks for the call in. Just one quick call as well. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Thank you for holding. Where you're calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hi, it's Bertha here.
Good morning.
Good morning. I want to thank John for his insight. I'm personally 100% behind everything he's said this morning.
I'm absolutely, utterly sick of this scaremongering that's going on. And I really do think that we should have people in the financial sector giving opinions and not politicians. Politicians are not financiers. It's abundantly clear that they're pretty bloody hopeless at it. And I lived in Spain before Europe was even on the horizon. I lived in Spain where if the local captain of the Guardia took a dislike to you, he could march you to the border and send you home. I lived in Spain without all the EU rules and regulations. There was never any threat to me whatsoever. My children went straight into the local school. We were welcomed, and I believe that even when we are finally out of the EU, that attitude will remain the same. And just thank you, John. Thank you for the insight. We need more men like you.
More men like you there, John.
Thank you.
More men like you there, John.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.